Good afternoon. I'm Steve Hamilton. We're here live at FDIC. I have the illustrious and quite handsome Clark Lamping from Clark County, Nevada with us.
What does illustrious mean, Steve?
Illustrious?
Yes.
Look in the mirror.
Is it a compliment?
Okay. It is. Yeah.
All right.
FDIC.
FDIC. It's good to be back.
2021.
It is good to be back. Oh. I missed these people. I missed this event. I missed the networking. I'm just happy we're back. Classes are full. I just enjoy. I never liked distance learning. I never liked online learning. So it's nice to sit in a classroom and being able to interact with instructors, interact with other students, professionals, vendors. Love it. Love it.
I can't even follow that. You hit everything. I feel the exact same way, but it's weird. Yeah. It's August. Right.
Yeah.
Instead of April, it's
actually a little warmer outside. Yeah, it's nice. Walking around in shorts.
A little warmer.
Yeah.
Not in here.
It's freezing in here.
In here, it's freezing.
Yeah.
Hence why I'm still wearing all this.
That's why I'm shaking.
Right.
Yeah.
Clark County, Nevada.
Clark County, yes, sir. Southern
fire rescue.
Southern tip of the state of Nevada.
Mm.
All right. The southern tip. We have 4 fire departments in Southern Nevada. We have the city of Las Vegas. We have the city of North Las Vegas, city of Henderson, and then Clark County. We're the largest. We have about 30 stations, 30 engines, 7 trucks, 26 rescue, which are EMS transport units. We have a technical rescue team, almost 700 personnel.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
I like it.
We service the Las Vegas Boulevard. So what people don't realize, when you go to Las Vegas, if you're on what we call the Strip, you're actually in Clark County. The city of Las Vegas starts at Sahara Road and goes north. So downtown Fremont Street, that's city of Las Vegas. Everything else is a strip as we know it is Clark County.
So I was going to cover that. Glad you did, but I was going to be like, because we've known each other for a minute.
Yep.
And it blew my mind when you told me that. Yeah. Like the Bellagio, the MGM Grand.
Everything.
A huge strip of what people see in their mind when you say Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Is not Las Vegas. It's Clark County, Nevada.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything, if you're familiar with Las Vegas, it's to Circus. Anything north of Circus is going to be Las Vegas. Everything south, all the way down to Mandalay Bay, that's all Clark County.
So,
150,000 hotel rooms. 150,000 hotel rooms.
Wow.
We have more hotel rooms in Las Vegas and Clark County than Manhattan.
I did not know that. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a pretty big place. Busy.
That's a lot of people. Busy. Yeah.
They keep us busy for sure.
We'll get the elephant done and out of the room.
Okay. Yep.
Route 91 Harvest Festival.
Yes.
So you had the potential to be ridiculously proximal to that.
Yep.
Your house.
My house. I was at 11s at the time. 11s was actually on scene. They were on scene listening to the music when the shooting started. But engine 11 is 0.9 miles away. So they were on scene. Real heads up captain, newer captain, real heads up guy. And the back seat was ex-military. And they started hearing the popping going off. And he said, that's gunfire. And the captain said, and by the way, the military gets brand new firemen, brand new probationary firemen. And he says, that's gunfire. And the captain says, it's a concert, it's fireworks. And the probationary firefighter says, that's gunfire. And the captain says, that is fireworks. And the firefighter got up and got aggressive and said, I'm telling you what, you don't talk to a captain like that's a probing.
Right.
He says, and there's some other words we're not going to say on the radio. He says, I promise you that's gunfire. And the captain says, are you sure? And he says, I'm positive. So the captain gets on the radio and says, hey, dispatch, do you have any reports of gunfire at the Route 91 Festival? Dispatch says, negative, we have no reports of gunfire. And 2 seconds after that, engine 11, we just got a report of gunfire. Engine 11, we have multiple reports of gunfire. So the heads up captain said, throw the engine in reverse, get out of here.
And
they left the festival because he knew, split second decision, they were going to be mobbed. They're in the hot zone and they were not going to be able to do anything. They're not going to be able to provide EMS while they're getting shot up. So they immediately got the engine out of there, put in a secure location, and then set up the plan.
That's O'Shaughnessy, right?
It was, yes, it was Captain O'Shaughnessy.
Because we, one of the radio shows that I did, I actually had him on as a guest.
Did you?
Good. Yeah, he laid that, he laid that out.
Yeah.
I'm sure the people here don't know that, but
okay.
He laid that out exactly the way you just did. But the important link to that, that I found ridiculously important, is you worked a shift before, the day before.
The shift before. And the day
after. You had a pass on the next morning.
Yeah.
Which was
something that we before then didn't do really well. There was so much going on in Las Vegas all of the time. All of the time. There's so much going on that it's tough to keep the fire department briefed. So we're driving down the road and they're building stand and there's trailers lined up and there's food suppliers getting pulled in. And I says, I have no idea what's going on over there. What's going on? We did some research on the internet, Route 91. This is how many fans, this is how many acts, this is how many days. I said, that's a lot of people, guys. We need to go pre-plan this. We need to pre-plan this. And so we on B platoon pulled up, we parked and it wasn't open yet. So they're just setting up and we walked from all the way from the north all the way to the south. We talked to security. We actually met with a bunch of people, walked to Metro Police's command post. And my first question to the command post was, what's your plan for an active shooter? And they said, there's two bars, right? Everything else is tents, but there's two bars that were structural. And he said, those are structural and that's where we're gonna try to put people if anything starts happening. I said, all right, can you give me any information you have? And Metro Police gave me their IAP with, you know, everything on it. And I took that back to the firehouse. And I says, hey, next shift, Captain O'Shaughnessy relieved me. I said, you guys better go take a look at this. Here's the IAP. He said, I still have the IAP. I saved it. I said, here's the IAP. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on. And, you know, typically we don't have a problem with country fans, right? Other musics, there's going to be problems. Kids, we have at the same location, we had the Warped Tour. So a bunch of kids, we ran like 75 heat exhaustions or something ridiculous like that because it's a bunch of kids and they had it in the middle of the day. So I wasn't expecting any problems with the fans, but so yeah, that's how the pass down went.
The reason I forced you into that.
Yeah.
That's huge heads up thinking to engage and just driving around in your footprint and you see something and stop and say, what's this about?
Right.
Ask questions. We need to prepare in case there's an emergency and you just engage.
Yeah.
And I've pushed that for a long time. So it's a perfect example of the why.
Yeah.
Because something like that could happen. And it's awesome.
So to fix the problem. Now the fire department is advised of every single event in Las Vegas. And now it's absolutely overwhelming.
Right.
Now I know that the tissue paper company is having a convention of 400 people. And I know that this guy, like this old has-been's on Boulder Highway, and he's singing to like 300 people. And now I just get emails that are pages long about everything that's going on in Vegas. But that's one of the things we said, you have to let us know that this stuff's going on.
Right. And using that as a prime example, recommendations pushed out to people was you got to have a permit, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Make the fire department a signature, an additional signature to the permit, or part of the process of getting a permit.
Yeah.
Is that way, the other flip to that is you have the ability as the fire department say, well, that doesn't meet fire code. That's no joy.
Yeah.
We don't like this. And you can get involved in that process. So I think it's great.
They actually are. But it's a different division, right?
That's right.
Fire prevention. And they're the ones, anytime you have an event over X amount of people, I don't know what that number is, fire prevention gets involved. And then if you want pyrotechnics, boom, boom, there's all kinds of forms. Sure. But the fire prevention, believe it or not, works for the building department. They don't work for the fire department. Fire prevention works for the building department. They were moved out of the fire department. So there's a disconnect. Not that we don't get along or anything, but
sure,
we're just not in the same building
anymore. Right. You're not under the same division.
Yeah.
So we were talking, you told me about an incident that had occurred that was really dynamic and it blew my mind. I mean, probably make a movie out of it. What's the foundation? Tell me what we were talking about on the phone about that incident you went to.
So I've since left Station 11. I'm now at Station 38, which is in the south suburbs. And so we had an incident a couple months ago where a couple was fighting. They were in an apartment complex, upstairs apartment, and the couple was fighting. And the guy just just walloped his old lady. And then she goes to run out of the apartment. He has a Glock. I think it was a 9mm. And as she's leaving the apartment, he starts shooting at her. She gets down, she gets away. He takes a couple shots at her. People report shots being fired in the apartment complex. One officer responds. He comes pulling up and the assailant just opens fire on the police officer. So he throws his car in reverse, gets it out of there. And now we have a full scale incident. So the police command post is arriving. Every cop in town is arriving. And then they deploy the SWAT team. We have what's the name of the vehicle? You might know. Not a Gator. It's a Buffalo, maybe. I'll think about it. But the armored vehicle. They have two of the armored vehicles that the SWAT arrive with.
APC.
Yeah, it's got a name for it. It's named after an animal. Anyway, so yeah, they have the two of those vehicles. Yeah. And this is just ramping up. Now, fire department has a command post. We have unified command. Police and fire are in unified command. Here's something that I didn't know that I find very interesting. SWAT is not in unified command. SWAT operates independently of police command, right?
Really?
Yes. Yes. So I'll tell you why that's significant. So
it sounds pretty significant.
So my boss, battalion chief, is on scene in the command post. Head of the police is in the command post. They make a plan. All right, we want fire to go down here, down the side entrance. There's a side gate to this apartment complex. Because by this time, every cop in town has blocked the entrance, right? So every street inside the apartment complex is full of cops. There's no way we're getting in there. So we pull around and we're staged on the side, on a side road with an access gate. We get out, we pop the gate open, we chalk the gate open, and we wait. And we're waiting for either injuries, police injuries, or fire.
That's pretty standard thing.
Standard, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But law enforcement standing up command post, you got a barricaded subject. You don't have a specific fire purpose. You're there to immediately react.
Right.
When there is something and additional resources, if they need it, they start coming, that kind of thing.
Yep. So we dedicate one. Yeah. One rescue is just dedicated for police. And when I say rescue, it's a transport. It's a two-person transport, paramedics on it. They are just dedicated for police. The rest of the alarm is dedicated for civilian, potential civilian injuries and potential fire. So we're sitting there and we meet. We call that the forward operating base. We call that the FOB. And they said, meet with your Metro counterpart down there. All right. So I have in my map book, I have the map of the apartment complex. And I say, what building is he in? So I know exactly where he is. And I'm looking at this paper map, right? And I said, okay. So I meet with my counterpart. Who's in charge for Metro? A couple sergeants raise their hand. All right. What's your plan? Well, we don't have a plan. We are here to support fire. All right. So I had about 12 police officers to support. We had a full alarm. We had three engines, a truck, and one more rescue. The other rescue was dedicated. So that's what we had there. So I said, all right, Metro counterparts, here's ideally what we want to do. If this place catches on fire, all right, I want to connect to this hydrant. Here's where I want to park. I'm going to stretch my hose right in between, and I'm going to make up the building right between 32 and 31. I'm going to take my hose right here, and that's going to put me right there at that building. And on paper, it looked like a great plan. All right. On paper, that was the plan. So I talked to police, and I said, can you support us? Can you support? Yep. And then so we all get together, the sergeants and the captains. All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to stage an officer here. We're going to stage an officer here. We're going to cover you here all the way down the line. Perfect. And we sit there, and we sit there, and we sit there, and we sit there. And the chief, the battalion chief says, I'm going to release some units. I can't tie up all these units. So they released the engine, except for my engine, they released two of the engines and the rescue unit. So now it's an engine and a truck. So Metro showed up, they have a drone now. They have a drone with a thermal imager on. So they put the drone up and they're getting a shot. And he said, my chief calls me and says, we've got a heat signature inside that apartment. I said, chief, I don't know. I'm looking right above the buildings. We're outside and I can't see the building. I said, I've got nothing.
And this is no 80s movie heat signature where like Blue Thunder, where you see the people moving up, heat signature being like,
oh yeah,
there's a high rise of heat. Like there's some fire. There's some, something don't look right.
They have a tick on a drone.
Right.
Right. And he's right above, the drone is right above the building. And he says, we've got heat coming off that building. And I said, chief, I don't know. And he says, I'm going to call the other units back. All right. So you're going to call the other units back. So in the meantime, SWAT, they're setting up and they've got their vehicles, Bearcat. It's called the Bearcat.
Gotcha.
That's the name of the vehicle. So they got their Bearcats and their full equipment. So while this is happening, right, I'm getting information from my chief and Metro's police are getting information from their chief. SWAT again is operating. No one's talking to SWAT and SWAT's not talking. So they flashbang the garage door. Boom! No one knew that was coming. They just fired off flashlights, blew the garage door off.
Wakes you up.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Scared. Everyone jumped. Blew the garage door off. And then they went interior, and there was the garage door from the garage to the interior of the house. They blew that door off, right? No shots fired. So as this is progressing, then they break, somehow they break the window of the apartment, and they're going to fly the drone into the window to look for the assailant. They break the window, fire gets oxygen, boom, fire lights off. Now we've got a fire. And we really weren't expecting it, because I was, the whole time I'm saying, the thermal imager's got to be wrong. I'm not seeing anything. If you're telling me there's that much fire in that apartment, we would see something by now. It was smoldering. It was a really tight apartment, and it was just smoldering. As soon as they broke the window, that thing fired off. So boom, throw our packs back on, and we go, cops, you good? Fire, let's go. All right, let's do the plan. So we pull up, pull the e-brake, right? One fireman jumps out, gets the hydrant. We dump a hose on the ground, and SWAT comes out and says, you can't be here. I need you over there. And I looked and said, hey, I got a hose on the ground, man. I said, first of all.
Yeah, we talked about this.
Right. And I actually told SWAT, I said, you're not in charge. She's in charge. I was talking to the female sergeant. She's in charge, and this is what we're doing. And he looked at her and said, she's not in charge. And I looked at her and said, are you in charge? And she said, nope, he's in charge. I said, are you kidding me right now? Are you kidding me? There is hose on the ground. We're spinning the hydrant, right? And now we're having an argument on who's in charge. I said, well, I can't move the engine. I have all this hose off the engine. I said, I've got 3,000 feet of hose on the engine. I could put hose anywhere you want, but the engine has to stay now that we're hooked to the hydrant stuff. He says, all right, you have to come this way. I can't cover you this way. We are not able of covering you this way. And like I said, on paper, it was a good plan, but the configuration of the buildings, that would have had us walk right past the assailant's bedroom window, right past.
And the purpose, your initial plan, where it's like, okay, if we have to lay hose, the thought process behind planning for fire is when SWAT uses their accoutrements, you know, we're throwing flashbangs, things like that, it's common they start a fire.
Yeah.
Real common they start a fire.
Yep.
So you just happen to prepare for a fire, and then there is a fire, not that SWAT initiated.
Right.
So,
and I'm looking,
now you're like, I can't go past this window. The building's on fire. It's an apartment complex. So we have massive exposure issues, right?
Yeah.
What do you do?
So I said, where can we go? Where do we go? And he says, I have to take you this way. And so we start pulling 2.5. Start pulling, that's a trunk line. It's a supply line. Pulling 2.5, not enough, not enough. So now everyone is pulling this. What was originally going to be a 150-foot lay. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason I chose that, is because shortest lay. I ended up being a 700-foot lay. He says, I've got to take you around all of these buildings around the whole complex out of the line of fire, and then I can stage you here. That's how we're going to do it. And I said, all right. So we have our fire equipment is apartment load. And a lot of people aren't going on the apartment load. It's a Cleveland load. We call it the apartment load because we specifically use it for this purpose. We'll use a 2.5, hook it to a Y, and we'll drop 100 feet of 1¾ inch, charge it, and then we have 100 feet of working line right there. So that was the plan.
We have a Cleveland loader in my department.
Yeah.
It's like a flat, and then charge it.
Yeah.
Big snake coil.
Yep.
And then it just, the loops just go. They just roll when you pull it. It's a great load for that kind of
thing. We like it. But you say that a lot, people are going to be on the internet. You're stupid. Cleveland load sucks. You're an idiot. Right? Yeah. I get that all the time.
I don't care. Works for me. If it doesn't work for you, good for you.
So we got the hose down. And now I have fire showing, all right? Fire is showing out of the windows. I have fire showing out of 2 windows, all right? We still don't have confirmation where this guy is. He could easily be behind a closed door. He's what we know now about, you know, sectioning off buildings. We know now that you could easily survive that fire in a bedroom behind a hollow core.
I'm sure that was a question, too.
That was a question.
Like, and, hey, do you,
and
can you put that cops, out? Well,
the cops are saying, there's no way he can be alive. I said, no. There is a very good chance he could be alive. All right. So the command post, the police side of the command post, they're in an RV way out on the street, but they got visual through cameras. That guy's on the chief's, in the chief's rear end saying, you guys got to put that out. So my boss is, my battalion chief is, put some water on that. I said, you just want to go exterior, chief? He says, go exterior. And I said, hey, SWAT. And now we're standing behind Bearcats. And I said, my boss wants me to put that fire out. How are we going to do that? So they said, stay behind the Bearcat. So we charged the line, and we couldn't get the right angle from being behind the Bearcat. So I said, I can't get it out from here. I'm going to have to move out there. And they said, all right. So they had shields, blast shields, and they put four shields around our firefighter. Firefighter takes a knee in the parking lot. He's got shields around him with a space about 12 inches between the shield. And that's where he's putting the nozzle through. And he just put an 1¾-inch straight stream into the room and raining it down.
It's like Clark County Spartans, right? Yeah. This is Sparta.
Yeah. So it was, yeah. And I've got a picture of it, and I got to, and the poor fireman, he's sitting down. You're not gonna be able to see this on radio, but he's on his knees and he's looking around. All these cops are standing right here.
It's like a whole armored turtle shell of blast shields.
Yeah. That they're, so wow. What he does is we put a bunch of water in that, and then we blow all the fire out of the Bravo side window. All right. Now we got to, hey guys, SWAT, we have to move over here. So I was like, all right, come on. And everyone's walking with their blast shields. We're carrying hose and we're back and forth. And we do the same thing on the, we did the same thing on the Bravo window. Put water in the Bravo window, fires out of the Alpha window again. I said, guys, we're going to do this all day, man. If you want us to put this fire out, we're going to have to go in. I said, what's your plan to finish this? And they looked at each other and they said, we don't know. We don't really discuss fires and active shooters simultaneously. I said, does anyone have respiratory protection? And they said, well, yeah, we do actually. We do have respiratory protection. All right. So they, and then I was accused of telling them what to do. Their version and fire's version were two different versions, but I was accused in the after action. Fire told us we had to go in there. It's not exactly true.
Right? She told you weren't in charge in the first
place. Yeah, and absolutely. So. The funny thing was, right? The way the police are, and it's unfortunate that the way the police are now across the country is no one wants to be in charge because that could cost you your job.
Absolutely.
So when I first showed up to the forward operating base, I asked who is in charge, and there's 12 officers there, and everyone put their hands in their pocket and looked at the ground. No one's. I said, come on, guys, someone has to be in charge. I have to talk to someone.
Right.
So I went over to SWAT. So after we got the hose laid and everyone's standing behind the Bearcat, I had about 20 SWAT officers. And I said, SWAT, who's in charge? 19 of them raised their hand. I'm in charge. And I looked at the one guy that didn't, said, what's wrong with you? He says, I'm on probation.
I was about to say, you had 19 alphas, and then you had the non-alpha, but is a tactical operator, and it's just smooth. And the 19, I'm in charge.
So that's kind of the funny thing, the mindset of SWAT, right? Those are some alpha males. If you're on SWAT, you want the ball. You want the ball. So, so they get their air packs. And they tell us, all right, here's where, and this went well. Fortunately, it went well. It could have gone really, really badly.
Sure.
So let me say this right now. After the fact, we should have just sat there and let the roof burn off that building. We evacuated the building earlier. The whole building was 8 apartments in the building, 4 on the bottom, 4 on the top. Everything was evacuated. No people in there. All right. Looking back, I can wait. I can wait there for 15 minutes till I know that he's gone. Right. Sure. When the roof starts burning off the building, I can confirm that he's pretty much dead. All right. Until then, I couldn't confirm it. So SWAT says they go up with air packs, no thermal protection, just in their SWAT gear and air packs. Right. And they force the door. He'd barricaded the door, and they asked us to back them up with the fire, and they pop the door, and that heat comes out. I said, oh my God, man. And it is hot.
Legit.
And you've got SWAT officers, zero visibility. Multiple open windows, guns. Everyone's got guns, obviously. And there must've been 8 or 10 SWAT officers in an apartment. All right. And so we're in full gear, right? We're breathing air on the door, and said, we got to help those cops out, man. They're going to get burned up. They have no idea what they're doing. They have no idea what's in store for them. So
they're about to.
Yeah. They're about to.
Right.
So next, SWAT hands a cat out, and this might be on a video. I try to get the video from the drone. So they hand this dead cat out, and we're getting ready to go in backups, and I have a cat, right? So I look over the edge, we're on the second floor, right? I did say it's the second floor, right? So this whole time we're on the second floor.
Yeah.
All right. So I had this, and another fireman's down there. I says, hey, Colton, catches. And I throw the cat off the balcony. Unfortunately, he catches the cat. All right. And so now the cat's, so get ready, turn on, get ready to go again. And here comes SWAT dragging a pit bull out. Full dead pit bull, big dog, probably 100-pound pit bull. God, gosh darn it. I didn't say that.
Right.
So now, right, now the dog is on the landing. So I grab the dog by the tuft of its neck and I just drag it down the stairs and I actually throw the dog in the yard and say, fix that one too. We got these cute little, you know, SPCA, animal, SPCA yeah. bought us all the animal yep. masks and stuff.
We so, have them too, yeah.
All right, so now we got, oh, it's funny. So that was kind of fun. So we actually go in, SWAT had not cleared the room yet. We had no confirmation. They couldn't find him at first. He ended up going into the back, closing his bedroom door, going into the master bathroom, closing the bathroom door, and he ate a bullet.
So what's the smoke condition in the area that they're trying to find the guy?
I would say very low visibility, gray to black smoke. Right.
And I don't ask that from the standpoint of survivability.
Right.
Almost zero visibility.
Yeah, almost zero.
If I remember correctly, some SWAT guys surprised some firefighters and all of a sudden.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we started fighting fire. We walked in and the room immediately to our right. So we start fighting fire. And then now, right, everything's zero visibility. And we go to make a turn and I'm face to face with a rifle. I've got a rifle in my face. All right. And now there.
Wait, that's firefighter. Next.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we have, there's four of us and about eight of them. So it was busy. The apartment was busy. It's the visibility was so bad. I said, do you have the victim? We found him. Is he dead? I said, I need to see it. So they walked me into the bathroom and I had to get on my knees and I couldn't even tell what color the guy was. He ended up being a black guy. I had to get on my knees and put my light 8 inches from him to actually inspect the gunshot wound.
Wow.
Right. That's how bad. And he was on the floor. So all the way down there, I couldn't even see. And it was obvious, right? I didn't touch him because it was a crime scene. So I didn't touch him, but it was obvious death. So I came up and we were fighting the fire, put the fire out. Yeah. So that's it. So here's the problem. Any other question?
No, I want you to follow it because there's crazy takeaways I want to throw out here about this.
So SWAT are like the Navy SEALs. And I'm not bashing my police department. We have a very good police department. And you've probably rarely do you see the Metropolitan Police Department on the news because we've got solid guys. We have good hiring practices. We have good training. And that's why we don't have BLM riots in our town because we have a good fire. We have a good police department.
Right? You can be the greatest practitioner. Not everything's going to go right every single time.
Yeah. And the SWAT team is, I know the guys on SWAT. We do training with SWAT. But our problem was that SWAT operates independently and SWAT and the police department don't talk. So I had this fantastic plan laid out in detail about what we were going to do. SWAT had no idea about that plan. And I had no idea that that plan was not going to work. And one of my recommendations was we need a SWAT officer in the ICP or the forward operating base. I needed a SWAT officer because we stood out there for 20 minutes, 30 minutes waiting for something to happen.
Sure.
We could have easily had someone come out and say, that plan is not going to work. Here's the new plan. And I said, absolutely. Right. Absolutely. We'll take that hydrant. I'll come in that way. It's fine with me. But
yeah,
the fact that we had a plan and everyone had a plan. Right. And we had a whole first alarm. They knew the plan. And then boom, hose comes off the rig. That plan's not going to work. Plan B. Son of a gun.
So I understand the tactical advantage of SWAT operating in the way that they did.
Right.
A good example of that is the Pulse shooting, nightclub shooting in Orlando. Firefighters are there. They don't have, their radios aren't encrypted. You can scan some of the Orlando stuff. But they have law enforcement channels, some of them, but it's not, you're not getting SWAT channel.
Right.
Yeah, that's encrypted. You don't want to let people know what's going on.
Yeah.
So when they did the dynamic entry and explosive wall breach on the seaside of the club, law enforcement knew about it, SWAT knew about it, the fire guys didn't know about it. Okay. And then all of a sudden, boom. So same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're now going to do a dynamic entry. You don't know why they even chose to do a dynamic entry.
Right.
SWAT will do dynamic entries because they lose contact with the individual and it's been a long amount of time. And okay, we just can't sit here all day. We can't sit here for a week.
Yeah.
We're going to have to do something. We'll have to do some stimuli. We got to do something. Or they could do a dynamic entry because shots are fired. Because if there's a hostage, all of a sudden, whatever the circumstances are, that hostage is in jeopardy. So now we're doing a dynamic right. entry. That's a lot of different variables for you guys to just be sitting in line and wait. And now they're doing a dynamic entry. Why? Yeah. Like, did you start shooting at them? Like, you getting reports that there's a heat signature? Do they know there's a fire? Like, you know right. what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's a scary place to be.
And but I know you do a lot of training on this, Steve.
Yeah.
But when you train, right? We have similar training, right? Because I've read your stuff. So we always train in schools, malls. We train in the firehouse, right? Right. And you go in here room to room to room. We've never trained on the building's on fire.
Right? Sure.
We've never yeah. trained on this place is on fire. And now we are doing a MACTAC operation or, you know, hostile MCI operation with fire, with fire.
So,
and even SWAT said when it was all done in the after action, they said, yeah, we never really even thought about that.
Right. But there's stuff out there. Fire is a weapon. Yeah. Arlington Fire right now, in conjunction with their local law enforcement, they're doing a regional consortium thing. Their fire is a weapon stuff. Information is detailed and it's great. And they are literally going through a whole bunch of different modalities of testing everything and all kinds of stuff. It's really good. But I say that to say, fire is a weapon. When you think fire is a weapon, so the mall, we're thinking improvised incendiary devices, pouring right. gas, hundreds of people. Your incident was fire as a weapon. The individual used fire as a weapon. It could be against the structure. Just somebody wants to commit arson, that's fire as a weapon. That was against the law enforcement and the other first responders. You guys out there, I'm going to burn this up. And now you have to contend with it.
Yeah.
The response posture or how you're going to integrate that plan that looks great on paper, that is how we're going to prepare and respond to fire as a weapon in the first place. It should be those communications, those training run through some things, as you said. So we start small with what we want to do, right. generally speaking. You don't train everybody how to fight a 4-alarm fire.
Yeah.
If we haven't covered the basis of the first alarm yeah. fire. So in my mind, that's where you're at you've had your first alarm
yeah.
fire as a weapon incident. The irony about this, and of course, you know, SWAT, as we said, alphas, we've been asking fire to put on body armor, to go with law enforcement, to go into a potential warm zone where there may be a shooter left over. There may not be, there may be threats. That 10 plus year conversation, fire's not feeling too cool about body armor and yeah. being in that environment. In an instant, we're flipping the script. So, oh yeah, you're not comfortable wearing body armor. I understand. Now it's law enforcement. Hey, do you have air pack?
Yep.
Yeah. You ever worn bunker gear before?
No. They don't even own it. They yeah. don't even own it.
Okay. You look like you're 46. Yeah. Take your coat off. Here you go. Here's a coat.
Yeah.
Now SWAT's like, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
What about a road officer?
Yeah.
Now we're going to flip some stuff. This is bad. We don't have a lot. We got to go do something. We got to get in there. There could be a threat. We got to try to put some water. I'm going to need you to put on an air pack and come with me.
Right.
What's the cop going to say?
Nope.
Pretty much same thing fire somewhere now. Body armor? A helmet, you want me to go in it and you're not even going to give me a gun? I'm telling the cops same thing. Hey man, come with me and I'm not giving you my house. So yeah. Let's go do this.
Right. And typically you'll find most cops are scared to death of fire. They want nothing to do with fire.
Yeah. It's right. One of two things. I want nothing to do with fire, or I failed the test to be a firefighter. Yep. So I became a cop. Yeah.
So a couple personal points I took away, Steve, is right. So SWAT accused fire of pushing them towards a strategy.
Yeah, you put me out of my right? put me out of my op plan.
Right. I accused SWAT of pushing me towards a strategy. So I recommended that they go in with air packs. And so they took that. I was in charge of fire at the 4 operating base. The battalion chief was in the street.
Right.
And they said, we took that as you telling us what to do. And then I said, well, you told us to go inside that apartment before you had, before we're cleared.
Sure.
So I'm going to take 100% responsibility for this. I was fire captain of an engine company. I put my people in danger. I absolutely, positively, unnecessarily put my people in harm's way by doing that. That could have had a very, very bad outcome. Mind you, when we opened up, when they opened up the bedroom door, when they opened up the bathroom door, it was still a tenable environment. It was still a tenable environment. There was no soot on the walls. There was no soot. After they opened it up and then the smoke obviously filled the space. But before that, they said it was completely clear visibility. That was a tenable environment. And we were in there. We were in. I had my guys in an inside apartment with a person who's already shown he is ready to commit some violence. So that is on me. And it was just a foreign situation for me. And I've been a captain for 12 years. Never been anything like that before. But I learned, and I lost some sleep over that. I lost some sleep thinking that how could I let that happen? How could I put my people in harm's way like that? And it won't happen again. And I had a long conversation with my battalion chief on what happened. I said, Chief, boss, I screwed that up. I screwed that up. And he's a really nice guy. He says, don't be so hard on yourself. I says, man, we were lucky. We were lucky, but we're not going to do that again. I said, just for the record, I'll burn the whole
block down.
Yeah, I'll burn the whole building down. I'll burn the whole building down again before I go into an apartment with an active shooter. Now we don't know where he is.
Sure.
So that's on me. That is absolutely on me.
That's a huge humble thing to say. I won't tell you not to be hard on yourself because we already were. And I don't think it's a bad thing to be hard on yourself when you have a lesson learned, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
My thing is, no matter who it was, put somebody else in your shoes. The same thing's probably going to happen. Yeah. A similar outcome's going to happen. So if there's solace, hand you that. Would another captain in your organization have done pretty similar to what you guys ended up doing? So change. Now you unfortunately had that experience and then lost some sleep over it, but you guys have text history. Now we can
change the
situation. Now we can start to, we don't want to go through this again. So what are we going to do now?
Right.
And I think that's great. I thought it was really important to share that story.
Yeah,
we covered FDIC a little bit, but these kinds of stories, that is, FDIC is teaching, educating, sharing well past 5 o'clock.
Yeah,
when the stuff closes.
Absolutely. We were together last night, talking about this.
Right? Absolutely. So it's amazing that's what this environment is. And you get these kinds of stories, and then all of a sudden somebody's like, dude, what happened to you?
Yeah.
Let me say that again. And
I know myself, and I'm sure you'll agree, I've learned way more outside of the classroom at FDIC than inside the classroom.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that. And that's very humble to sit here and have those conversations. Well, I screwed this up, and that's great. I appreciate it.
Hey, let's talk about you. What are you doing? What's on your docket for this year, this month, this year? What do you think?
It's funny you should say that. My DVD, Responding to Scenes of Violence, it's about 5 years now. Want to start planning and process. We had meetings with Mark Howe from Books and Videos. We're going to blow stuff up.
Okay.
We're going to do Responding to Scenes of Violence, explosives, IED. We're going to go out and blow stuff up. We're going to do a high-speed camera. Some of it is still in the planning stage, like how we're going to do this, but we're going to talk about and show, if this was a bomb, how big is the threat area away from this? Where do I need to go?
Yeah.
What's this going to do? Trying to think of scenarios like a school, two-story school. If you have a pipe bomb, it's about this big, in a first floor classroom, and I have shot students in a second floor classroom right above that, in a 1938 block construction, is that bomb going to touch me up there if it goes off? No, probably not.
Okay.
Where it is, So can I go get those victims? Absolutely. I'll show you that.
Yeah.
And we'll set scenarios like that just to give you some more information and knowledge about that type of stuff. Then maybe we'll transition into another production of Fire as a Weapon.
Perfect.
And create yep. situations like that to say, how do we deal with this? So yep. one good example of a barricaded subject, more of a residential housing setting, put a ladder truck, maybe a house over, put the stick up and wait.
Yep.
And when it comes through, just yep. start throwing some water at it, try to keep it confined. But the using the shields on the fly like that,
yeah,
that's pretty legit. That's great.
Not ideal.
No, not ideal. Not ideal.
Not ideal. And I was tell you what, I was the most nervous on that scene. I was behind the Bearcat. We all had to be behind the Bearcat. I was behind, oh, I'm so nervous right now. I'm not comfortable right now.
But I'm glad you said that again, because there's a tidbit about that. Oh, the Cleveland load. And yeah. Let's get on the internet. Cleveland load sucks.
Right.
Cleveland load worked out pretty good to charge that thing behind the Bearcat and not have to stretch out 200 Absolutely, feet, yeah. inch and three quarter yeah. all over the place. You tactically drop that thing right here. Okay. Yeah. Send me water, peek out and do your thing.
Yeah. And that's why we use it. If it didn't work, it works for us.
Right.
You can charge 100 feet of hose on an apartment landing. And we actually call it the apartment load. You can put it on an apartment stair landing and charge 100 feet of hose.
Yep.
Right. You can't advance it dry. Right. You can.
Right. You yeah. can't, but you can play with it. It's whatever it is yeah. you want to do with your stuff. But I just had to throw that out there because, yeah. you know, the whole thing, things like, okay, well, here, you take your Maddie Dale load or whatever yeah. it is you're rocking. Get it behind the Bearcat. No, by the way, you can't leave the Bearcat and you need to be here. And,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's good. Yeah. We appreciate we. When I say we, I mean the fire service.
Oh, yeah.
Appreciate the work you're doing. It's good stuff.
Well,
it is
you.
Good stuff, Steve. It is absolutely necessary. It's unfortunate, but it's necessary. It's unfortunate. In 2021, we are so worried about all these active shooters and us getting shot and cops getting shot and all this, but it is absolutely necessary. And you found your niche for sure.
Well, and I said this in class the other day, and thank you so much for that. That's humbling to me. COVID put everybody out of whack.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But as things are opening up, as things are released, people are out being able to go out, restaurants, things like that, you're able to get out. If there was a time for an organization to be concerned about shootings and violence and it blowing up into an active shooter type event, I'd say that's right now.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And the combination of COVID, people being quarantined for a year, and forgetting how to behave in society, absolutely forgetting. And you see it, you can't even go to the drive-thru without someone screaming at you, right?
Sure.
You can't, it's Starbucks. I got screamed at getting off a plane, right?
Yeah.
Just because I wasn't getting off the plane fast enough.
Stressing and freaking out.
Right. And then on the political environment and all this violence, I think we can confirm, we always knew it, that human beings suck. This last year confirmed that human beings suck. A human being will go buy 500 rolls of toilet paper and make sure no one else in town can get a roll of toilet paper, but they have 500 rolls
for no reason.
For no reason.
Yeah.
For no reason. And just so human beings, yeah, they don't, we obviously don't care about anyone else on the planet except ourselves.
It's sad.
Yeah.
It hurts my head. But yeah. I think there is an opportunity for us as a society in America to either soar or absolutely fall on our face. Economic downtimes, people out of money. If you evaluate any of an aggressor from an active shooter event or a hostile attack or something like that, you look at their background, it's let down and failure after failure after failure.
Yeah.
And all they need is a little push. And COVID's a big ass push.
Yeah. It was a kick. It was a Spartan kick.
It is my sheer hope that we come out of this in a much better way than, unfortunately, I think we will.
Yeah.
So, as again, take it to heart that if you're not preparing for this stuff, if you don't listen to this, you sharing that story with us and go, on Monday, why don't we call the cops and see what they're doing? Let's maybe have a meeting and a conversation, start laying some stuff out. You're going to be in the same situation that Clark was, and maybe you won't be so lucky. Yeah. Maybe the outcome will be different. So again, thank you so much for
absolutely for coming Steve, on. Thanks for inviting me.
I value your friendship.
Yes, greatly. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think
are we good? FDIC?
Yep.
If you're not here now, April.
April
for sure. Do not miss this, dude. I saw, you know what? One of the things I love, all the young faces. I see all these brand new kids.
Yeah.
First year, second year, never been here before. And you look at them like stars in their eyes and you just get to see them and introduce them around. Oh my God, is that so-and-so? Yeah, that's him. I'll introduce you. You're going to introduce me to Dave McGill. You're going to introduce me to Bill Gustin. You're going to introduce me to Bobby Hall.
Right.
Oh my God. And I just love seeing the enthusiasm.
Oh, the energy here is crazy. It's great. I say this quite often and it's totally not appropriate. If you come here once, you may sell your born or unborn children to come back here again.
Yep.
Because it's that invigorating.
Yeah.
That
absolutely
crazy. So absolutely. April 2022.
All right.
Right. As long as there's no whiskey
Delta variant.
No, yeah. We'll be to W Echo, by then. A whiskey variant.
Variant. Speaking of whiskey, what are you doing tonight?
Jameson. Or Tullamore Dew.
Where are we going?
Somewhere that has that.
All right. You're buying.
Well, again, Steve Hamilton, thank you very much, Mr. Lamping.
All right.
Live from FDIC.
We're on Facebook. Hey, if you have any questions, I'm on Facebook. Look me up. I'd be happy to talk.